Elizabeth's older sister, Mary, who comes to the throne before Elizabeth, ends up marrying Philip II, who becomes king of Spain. So there was a very, very close relationship at this point in time between Spain and England. And Spain is the most powerful country in Europe at this point in time. So its influence is predominant in all affairs of government, but also in fashion. Children from about the time they were 5 years old were dressed exactly like adults. The concept of children's clothing did not exist through most of history. And it's very funny that at this point in the 21st century, we're getting back to kind of dressing children as miniature adults again. It was actually the 20th century that made a distinction between adults and children in terms of costuming. The Spanish look of this period was extraordinarily stiff and formal. The concept of, you know, when you move, as you're sitting here, when you get up, as I'm standing here, our clothes wrinkle because our body's moving inside them, right? Your body didn't move inside these clothes. First of all, both men and women would have been extremely tightly corseted, something we don't think about. We always think of women as being corseted, but men usually were too, through most of this period and into, in and out of the next several hundred years. So these little girls would have had corsets on, and these are corsets that were made of fabric, but then they would have places where you could put busts or bones, essentially, stiff pieces of either wood or metal or whalebone. Elizabeth was as powerful, probably more powerful, than her father. But yet Henry VIII created a look that was unique to him and to England, which Elizabeth did not do. Her look was the synthesis of influences from other countries in Europe that she put together very cleverly and then made look richer to show the importance of England. Stockings, you see a lot of legs in stockings on men of this period. But knitting didn't really exist yet. So these stockings would be made out of fabric. They didn't stretch. Our whole concept of let's put on a pair of spandex tights and go do a Shakespearean play, that's not how these guys looked. The same fabric that their shirts were made out of would have made their stockings. You see also something that was very popular going into the Elizabethan period happening here. This is something called slashing or painting, P-A-N-E, not P-A-I-N, which was the strips of fabric with what looks like another layer or underwear. You see the white part showing in between the strips on his pants. The old wives' tale goes that at a famous battle, when the Swiss, who were the mercenaries of their period, actually defeated the French on a field of battle, they took as loot a lot of rich silk and embroidered fabrics, and they tore them into little pieces and stuffed them in the holes of their clothes, which were all tattered. This became a gigantic industry in Europe. People would make brand new clothes and then slash them and pull out the lining of them in other colors. Sometimes it was just their shirts through their sleeves. But for hundreds and hundreds of years, this was a fashion in Europe. The third thing we're going to talk about, which is the Elizabethan fashion necessity of the age, is a ruff. It's this kind of plait that went around people's necks, okay? You see these in all the portraits of the age. It existed for about 150 years, lasted even after it had disappeared in France and Spain and England. It lasted for about 80 more years in Holland. You see famous portraits of You see the portraits by Frans Hals of all these Dutch middle-class merchants with huge ruffs on, even after the rest of the European continent has stopped wearing them. Part of the reason for the continued popularity of this ruff is the introduction from Holland of starch. The English had never seen starch before. And emigration of some women from Holland, they came to England, they saw these tiny ruffs, and they set up business caring for the ruffs of the rich and the royal, which enabled the ruffs, in turn, to get larger over time. And a few years later, you get the invention of, you get a process so that steel can be heated, and you have what's essentially like a curling iron type mechanism, which was called a poking stick, so that you could starch these fabric ruffs and then heat, stick the poking stick inside them and heat and create different shapes, which helps to keep this fashion popular for a long time and made some women very, very wealthy by setting up shop, caring for in London. Although Queen Elizabeth decides in 1595 that she doesn't like blue ruffs, and she passes a law that nobody can wear a blue ruff, okay? Now this sounds strange, except you have to realize these kind of laws were passed all the time, not only by Elizabeth, but by monarchs through the centuries and in different countries all over Europe. They were called sumptuary laws, and their purpose was to regulate the dress of the population of a particular country and a particular time period. Elizabeth was just following the other kings of England in passing sumptuary laws. Let me give you the wording from her one about blue starch. "It is Her Majesty's pleasure that no blue starch shall be used by any of Her Majesty's subjects." Simple, okay? That's it. No blue starch. Basically, the purpose behind these laws were to try to regulate extravagance, to try to regulate the vast amounts of money that particularly young people trying to be fashionable would tend to spend on fashion so that they could spend it on things the government thought or their parents thought were more important. Horses were one of the things the British always wanted money spent on instead of clothing. The other concern was that if you let just anybody wear anything, obviously the whole structure of society was going to fall apart. I mean, if you couldn't tell the milkmaid from the princess, you were in real trouble. You read back through history and you come upon these long, boring passages. For example, there's one in which Elizabeth is a teenager during her sister Mary's reign. Elizabeth's been put in the Tower of London and they're considering bringing her up on charges of treason because of a revolt that happened in her name. Now, we don't really know how much she was part of this revolt, although we do know she knew about it. But anyway, she was proved herself in writing to her sister that she was not to blame, and she was eventually let out of the Tower of London and went back to her country estate. But she comes then to court for a holiday or for some other reason to visit Mary, and you get page-long descriptions of how many people in what color clothing and what the clothing was made out of riding with her into town. And you get these passages all through history. And even as a costume designer for years, I've gone, who cares? Yeah? But in fact, what it's doing is explaining to a great extent the politics of the day. You know by the colors of what people were wearing. Elizabeth's train, her retinue when she comes into London after she's been let out of the Tower, there's a passage about it containing 100 men dressed in green and white velvet. Green and white were the Tudor colors. She was signifying her legitimacy as a person of that royal family. She deserved to be considered a representative of that family. All the men that were following her were dressed in the colors of her family. And it's important that they were wearing velvet, because only certain branches of society were allowed to wear velvet. The problem with sumptuary laws is that they're impossible to enforce. I mean, what are you going to do? Arrest and put in jail everybody whose ruff is an inch and a half too wide? You know? Elizabeth passed laws saying that you could only wear one ruff at a time. I don't know if on any of our pictures of her we have examples or not. Actually, here we have a picture of her wearing two ruffs at the same time.